Welcome to WGIL Galesburg Live. Now, this week's host, Will Stevenson.
Good morning. It's 717 at 93.7 FM and 1400 AM WGIL. This is Galesburg Live on Saturday, September 22nd. I'm Will Stevenson, host of Galesburg's Evening News, weeknights from 5 to 6. Glad to be taking my usual turn on our Saturday morning program. We're so glad to have you here as well. And as always, we'll have a couple of very interesting, I think, conversations this morning. In our second hour, about an hour from now, I'm going to talk to Craig Gilson with Ameren, Illinois. It is Farm Safety Week, and they're really urging farmers to, among other things, be aware of overhead power lines and some perhaps natural gas lines, too, that may be underground, especially as harvest is pretty much happening in full force now, very much so, kind of moving quickly, as I saw some reports yesterday that conditions of both corn and soybeans are significantly better than they were this time last year. So the harvest is definitely happening, and they want farmers to be safe, and we'll talk about that an hour from now. But this hour, we have a couple of guests, a couple of first-timers to this program. We're going to talk about the Knox County Housing Authority this morning and all the things going on there. Joining me here is Derek Antoine, Executive Director of the Knox County Housing Authority, and Cheryl Loeffler, the Assistant Director, who are both here this morning. Good morning. Thanks for coming in.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Good morning.
You both have been around the organization a long time, right?
Correct.
Derek, talk about you first. You've been there a long time, and you've been you kind of moved up to the role of executive director.
Yeah, I started, it would have been August of 2007. The former director, then director, Margie Helick, took a chance on a guy that had never had spent 1 minute working at any governmental agency, whether that be state, local, or this one funneling federal dollars.
It all happens to all of us at some point or another, working for a federal agent or a governmental agency, I think.
Right, yeah, definitely. So she took a chance, and it worked out. So I'm on my 12th year now, and love what we do, and love what I do and the people I work with. So it's been a great ride.
What led you down that path?
I had bounced around retail for probably... Well, not probably. Ever since I started working, 15, when I started here in town, I was 15 years old at the Eagle Country Market up on North Henderson Street.
Ah, yes.
Mm-hmm. And
my dad was a longtime employee of that.
Oh, nice.
He got, how shall I say, forced into retirement?
Yes, yes. Yeah, a few things happened there. So,
yeah.
So starting there, I had worked just about every type of retail over the course of probably... 16, 17 years or so, and I was tired of retail. So we just hit the one ads, and the job was posted, and I met with a few of the folks at the Housing Authority and was intrigued by the work, and here we are.
What made it appealing to you, do you think?
Purpose. Yeah. The purpose, we were just talking off the air, the purpose of retail is to make money and profit. And, it's just at times can be grinding, over the course of a 16 year career. And at times I loved retail, for its flexibility and its ever changing atmosphere. But, at a point when I had my family, I wanted to settle down. I wanted to spend more time at home, and it just started to, like I say, it started to grind. So, getting out of retail was the main objective at that point. But at the same time, I wanted a little more purpose than just turning dollars. And the Housing Authority really spoke to me in that capacity.
My dad, who again worked for Eagles for 30 years, told his two kids to never get into retail.
Yes.
Although I think some of us kind of did at some point.
Sound advice, yeah.
Although selling popcorn for Boy Scouts is not really retail. But
that's close.
That's another discussion for another day. It'll all be in my book, trust me.
Yes, yes.
Cheryl, how long have you been with the Housing Authority?
I started at the Housing Authority in August of 2009, so I'm into my 10th year right now.
What led you down that path?
Well, I had, I grew up in the area, didn't get too far from home, but I went to Knox, and mm-hmm. then after Knox, started a career in social service work with United Way and then a statewide nonprofit. And much like Derek, it's just about helping people, giving people an opportunity and feeling good about the work that we're doing to enable people to be housed and have healthy, happy lives.
I'm glad you said feel good because, and Derek, maybe you can talk about this too. I think perhaps unjustifiably so, when you think of public housing or a housing authority of any type, I don't know that that always has in some people's minds a positive connotation to it, but it really should, shouldn't it?
I absolutely think so. And I think a lot of that, Will, you and I have had conversations about this in the past, but mm-hmm. that I just think it's a situation that the general public or folks just don't understand. They see what's, you know, kind of glorified or sensationalized, whether that be through, you know, newspaper or media or movies.
Hey,
or,
watch that blame the media stuff on this show, Derek.
Well, it's you know, and but sometimes sometimes that's on us too, Will, because mm-hmm. we have to be good at telling our own story, and we have to be the ones to put the information out there, because generally it's not something that folks would seek out. So unfortunately, in the past, and really still to this day, anytime something happens, and we talked about this, whether it be a violent incident or something affecting, you know, some type of violent crime or something, invariably, it when it is posted on Facebook or a newspaper article, it's the housing authority is blamed, or its tenants are blamed in some way. And truth be told, that is a very small percentage of our population. We don't hide the fact that we have folks sometimes do some things that isn't the best behavior, but we deal with that, and we try to move on. The good majority of our folks want to work hard. They want to contribute to the community they live in, and they appreciate that they have a safe place to live.
Are a lot of the people that you run into who become tenants and things like that, are they just people just trying to get through their day to day? Are they people trying to turn their lives around in some form or fashion? Is it a combination of that, or is it something else? Cheryl?
Well, I think the most basic element that we all need is the roof over our heads.
Yeah.
And that's where it starts for us, is that we're providing quality housing for folks. And when they have a roof over their head, then they can get to a job. You know, they can raise a family. They can get their kids in good schools. And that's what happens to a number of our folks who maybe move in from out of Galesburg, is they're coming here for a better opportunity, more jobs, better schools. But like I said, most of its basic element is they need housing.
Is it people coming here that are looking to change their lives, or is it people that have been here for a while looking to change their lives in some form?
I think it's both.
Okay.
You asked about, what do we have dreamers? And we absolutely have dreamers. You know, we have kids that graduate high school and go on to college. We have the Gale Scholars. We have folks getting, scholarships and going on and up and doing great things with their life. We have folks that come to public housing and spend, their entire life with us. When the sites were built back in 1970, we had one particular family that was from the floor up family. They came right in and several conversations with this family. They talked about the residence they had before had no running water, had a dirt floor. So they were so very thankful for the opportunity to have a safe place to live. This particular family raised generations of kids in public housing. And I understand that that's not an ideal thing, because at its inception, public housing is not meant to be a destination program. It's mm-hmm. it's meant to be a stair step. But at the same time, if we've provided a family an opportunity to be safe, to live in a sanitary home while their children grow and go on to great things, I think we're doing our jobs there as well. So,
and while you say that that's not what public housing is meant for, I would argue that maybe that having somebody like that, or having a family like that that's been there a long time, can really help you, as you said, tell your story mm-hmm. about how public housing works.
Exactly right. And like I said, that family was a huge family. Many of them went on to do very great and prominent things. And the matriarch, so to speak, the mother of that family, ultimately she passed while living in public housing. But at the same time, it was a great family to have out there.
Lived there since 1970.
That's correct.
Was,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. When the authority was created.
Well, authority was created a few years prior to that, but the family sites were built late '60s, and I think we housed our first families in early 1970.
What would you say is maybe in a broad sense, and I know I don't have completely enough time to perhaps answer this question adequately, but what's changed in that time? Would you say, other than the way things have just continually. Time has changed, things have become more modernized and things like that. Other than that, what do you think has changed in that time?
I think that's a solid statement. I mean, not to keep it in a nutshell. I think a lot of the housing authorities in the United States are dealing with our buildings are aging. So we don't have, when you mention the modernization and such, a lot of us don't have the newer buildings, the newer amenities, that type of thing, because our housing was built in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. And, mm-hmm. and so we're seeing some of those things. So we absolutely have done some things to bring those into a more energy efficient, a more compliant nature. But from a physical standpoint, not much. But just over the course of time, I think that the public perception of public housing has changed over that course of time. I would say probably for the worse. I think back in the 70s, it was probably looked at more as a, in a true sense of a social service program that was helping people. I think that's kind of morphed into dismay in the sense that we have a lot of folks that just don't want to work and are taking every handout they can get. And just they have no real incentive to get on up out of public housing. So it's just, you go back, 15 years now since, Cabrini Greens in Chicago was demolished, and we still hear stories about how that was the worst thing that's ever happened in this state because it funneled everybody out, and we're now dealing with that Chicago people that we hear time.
I thought the prison system did that. That he said too, sarcastically.
That too. Yes. Yes, that as well. Yeah. I think the misconceptions have continued to grow, and unfortunately they've festered because I just think that housing authorities could do a much better job of telling the story of who we are and what we do.
On the one hand, though, I would imagine that's probably certainly true to a point that you could tell your story better. But I imagine, unfortunately, there's going to be a certain group of the population that, no matter what you say or no matter how positive you make things or how positive the examples are of how good the housing authority is, there's still going to be that group that just either won't believe it or refuses to believe it.
Oh, that's right. That's absolutely right. I'd rather take the chance of telling our story and educating some folks and letting them know who we are and what we do. If we have some naysayers and some folks that don't buy in, it's not my business to worry about their opinions. So
there you go. I wish I could follow that that logic in my own life sometimes, but it's another discussion for another day. At 7:29, we need to take a break for news. We're talking with Derek Antoine and Cheryl Loeffler from the Knox County Housing Authority. There's some construction and some other good things going on that we're going to talk about in the course of the rest of this half hour.
Welcome to WGIL Galesburg Live. Now, this week's host, Will Stevenson.
It's 7:36 at 93.7 FM and 1400 AM WGIL. Thanks for joining us on Galesburg Live. I'm Will Stevenson with you this week. So glad to have you along. In about 45 minutes or so, we'll talk with Craig Gilson of Ameren about electricity and natural gas line safety, especially for farmers and others as harvest is well underway. But we'll have a lot of tips and other things coming up. Derek Antoine of the Knox County Housing Authority is in the process of harassing his help here while I'm setting up this segment here. But I'll let him confess to that if that's what he wants to do. But Derek Antoine is the executive director of the Housing Authority of Knox County, and Cheryl Loeffler is the assistant director. And despite what's going on off the air here, I'm glad to have you guys in.
Thank you.
You guys have been doing a lot of work, in the last couple of years to make things better at the Housing Authority. But specifically, I wanted to have you on because I had seen where, and I guess I wasn't completely aware that there's actually some construction and building of things going on at some of your sites, right?
Yeah, we have a very large project going on right now. It's roughly a $2.1 million project.
Wow.
Is actually doing some pretty great things. And I'll let Cheryl speak to it. She is very involved in that process and can give us a pretty good idea of what we've got going on out there.
Yeah, talk about what's happening, Cheryl, and what kind of led to it here, too, if you could.
Well, we started construction middle part of August. We're adding 6 units to our public housing portfolio on our family sites. And primarily the reason for that is to have some accessible units for folks who have physical needs that for their families. So we are building those units to keep in line with the requirements of the Section 504 of the Americans with Disability Act. We're required to have bedroom size units for at every bedroom size that we have. We have 2, 3, 4, and 5 bedroom units.
Wow.
So we are building 4 new 3 bedroom units and 2 4 bedroom units under this project.
I should probably back up and for folks who don't know, explain family sites and where those are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, family sites. We have 190 public housing units for families. We have 3 sites in Galesburg. We have Woodland Bend, which is out on the west side of town, we have Cedar Creek Place, which is near Steel School. And then where the construction is happening is Whispering Hollow, which is on South and Berrien Streets in the Taco Hideout neighborhood that people will probably be familiar with.
I love the Taco Hideout neighborhood.
Oh, so do we.
Yeah. So that's where the construction's happening right now. And we've been moving a lot of dirt and getting the footing set. And so soon before the snow flies, we'll have walls up and get that work continued.
Did you have to tear any buildings down or anything like that?
No, we have not had to tear any buildings down. We actually tore out a basketball court, but we're moving that to another location on the same site, so we'll still have that opportunity for folks.
We relocated some trees too, which if you haven't seen that process, is very cool to watch. We have some video up on our Facebook page if people want to go check that out. Cheryl took video, and it's just to watch the machines dig in, pick up a tree, and relocate it. If you haven't seen it, it's a pretty cool process.
And you're not killing the trees.
That's right. Cheryl was adamant that we save the trees.
There you go. But that's a very interesting process, and a very good thing that you're able to kind of expand without having to tear down other facilities in the process.
Yeah, it was a lot of work went into the planning for this, and it's the first, you know, over the course of, I'd like to say I've been there 12 years, and we've done a lot of capital projects. We've tuck-pointed brick, we've replaced plumbing, we've added exterior renovations and beautifications at the site and things of this nature. But this is the biggest construction project that Cheryl and I have ever undertaken at the Housing Authority, and most likely will probably remain that way even if we're there another 30 years. So a lot of planning went into this, and there were several locations, but because of what's under the ground, we had to flip some things around and do some moving around. But fortunately, no, we did not have to tear down existing structure and displace folks in the process.
$2.1 million, you said?
That's correct, yes.
How are you paying for that?
There's a fund from the public housing is broken down into two funds. One is called the operating fund, and that is the day-to-day operations. We're not allowed to spend that money on capital improvements. The other fund for public housing is called the capital fund, and it is a formula-based fund that gives housing authorities money to rehabilitate and modernize their properties, and we get approximately $650,000 or so a year for that. So this is actually the culmination of 3 years worth of capital funds that we've planned for and saved so that we could do this project.
What had you used that money in the past for, if anything?
Sure, yeah, several things. Like we talked about, any of the capital projects that we have are basically paid for out of that fund. So we've beautified the properties. We've tore out old blacktop and put in new concrete. We've replaced existing appliances and building systems. You know, we've built gazebos and exterior structures for the residents to enjoy. We've new boilers at Moon Towers. And Cheryl, like I say, jump right in anything that I'm forgetting. There's just over 12 years, it's a lot of projects that we've done. The fencing around Moon Towers. When I started at the Housing Authority, we did not have that exterior fencing, which serves both.
Serves both
a beautification purpose as well as safety and security. So just lots of things. That money goes, when we get it, it goes straight to work. It puts folks to work, and it generates a good amount of income, both for the agency as well as the folks doing the work for us.
I've been around here the better part of 16 years, and I guess you must have done a good job with things like that fencing, because if I don't remember it not being there, it must seem like it's
been
there a while.
That's right, yeah.
Talk about some of the other things, Cheryl. Well, but in terms of building this project, Cheryl, what further is kind of the timeline? I know you said you were hoping to have a good portion of some things done before the snowflakes fly here, but how soon are you looking to get those facilities up and running?
Well, you know, there's some, it depends on some unforeseen things. I mean, we've had to relocate some gas lines, which adds a few days, but the project's slated to be done next year.
Okay.
But I know that we're working to get ahead of the snow and weather, inclement weather things, and hopefully be able to work on the inside of the building and do some of that construction work over the winter. So hopefully, you know, next year we'll house some new families and have that work complete.
Is there already, I guess, sort of a need for that housing, or is there a waiting list? Maybe let's back up a little bit and talk about the process when somebody wants to apply for or needs public housing. What is that process, Derek?
Sure. Well, to address the first part of that question is, mm-hmm. as far as the need, yes, there's two things at play here. One, as Cheryl alluded to, regulation requires that we have accessible housing for a percentage of the population we serve.
Yeah.
So this is actually phase two of that project. Family sites that we're working on now is phase two. We completed phase one, which was we did 10 units at Moon Towers and 3 units at Bluebell, back in 2016. And some work continued in 2017. So we had some things there. And yeah, there is a waiting list, at those buildings to get into those units because unfortunately we have a need, with folks that have a need for accessibility. It's just one of those things. Applying for housing is really pretty simple. We have a simple application process. You just come in, indicate which of the programs you'd like to apply for. We do both public housing and Section 8. You make your application, you indicate your, you know, current conditions, your living conditions, your income, family status, that type of thing is all basically stated or documented for us. It goes through an approval process. We determine both eligibility for public housing and Section 8 and suitability. So when I say eligibility, you have to be at a certain income level. Suitability means, are you going to be a good tenant for us? So we put our folks through a criminal background check. We do a landlord screen. We bring folks in for multiple interviews and decide that, you know, ultimately there's not much of a decision. We're not judge, jury, and executioner, so to speak. As long as you're eligible and suitable, you're housed. But we do have a process that there are some things that have to be in place, and we're pretty strict with it because we take into account that while housing is a very important thing to folks, we have, you know, 750 families housed between all of our properties and programs, that it's our responsibility to keep safe as well. So we want to make sure the folks we put out on site are going to be good tenants.
Before I get back to, I had a different line of questioning I was going to go with here, but before I get back to that, how important is safety and what sorts of things do you do to kind of ensure the safety of your tenants?
Sure. You know, a few years ago, we actually received, you talked about the capital grant monies that we received, and
yeah.
We received just about right at $200,000 or a little bit more. This would have been back in 2010 for an emergency safety and security grant that allowed us to put cameras and lighting at all of our sites. So all three of our public housing sites are fully camered up. We have good security lighting, that type of thing. So we at least have that as a backdrop as to things that go on. We do tenant education. We do tenant screening. We have a very positive relationship with the Galesburg Police Department. We have a housing officer that's dedicated to the needs of the agency. We have several dedicated patrol officers who spend time patrolling the area, increase patrols when necessary, and we address things when we see them. We're very, I think one of the things that's been very important to Cheryl and I, and she could speak to it as well if she'd like, is that we react to things swiftly and consistently. And if there's an unsafe condition, whether that be tenant created or flat out safety of the site, if there's some unsafe condition, we work to rectify that as fast as we can.
Cheryl, anything you want to add about that?
No, I think we work with our tenants very intentionally to get folks to report things too. You know, we're not out there 24/7. I mean, we're out there a good portion of the days and nights, but you know, things happen when we're not there. So we do react swiftly to them, and we work with our residents to get them to report things that are, you know, we're unaware of, and so then we can follow up and react to those things.
In terms of back to what we were talking about in terms of the need for public housing, I imagine on one hand that's a good size number of families, that 750 number that you said you serve. I imagine you must be pleased that you have that number, and in one respect pleased that you have probably a waiting list of people, mm-hmm. waiting to get into sites, but mm-hmm. I imagine there's probably almost a thought that maybe you wish that maybe that need wasn't as great as it is.
Yeah, it's just like you said, it's the world we live in. There is a need for housing, and whether folks want to acknowledge that or not, you know, it's going to be there.
Yeah.
There is a there's no other word for it, Will, but crisis right now in terms of housing, in that the cost of housing, the cost of living has risen exponentially mm-hmm. over the last, you know, however many years, we'll say 10 years, 10 plus years. But the income level hasn't risen with that cost. And as such, there is a gap between what folks make and their ability to spend on housing and what housing actually costs. And I say it is crisis level because we're going to have to do something about it. It is creating a need. It's this need is not getting smaller. It's getting bigger. You know, you have folks that work full time, benefits, everything, and they cannot afford a home on their own. So this isn't just a program where we're seeing folks that, you know, don't want to work and don't want to go to school and just want to sit back and collect a check and collect, you know, all the benefits they can. There's folks out there that are busting their backs to make ends meet, and they just can't do it. So, yeah, this need is absolutely there, and it's not going away.
That said, I imagine, too, that you must also run into people who are glad and who are more than willing to take the housing that they can get. But I imagine there's also people, too, that must be really, I don't want to say embarrassed, and I'm trying to think of a better word, but who maybe have a difficult time coming right out and saying that they need help.
No, that's right. That's right. And we, you know, I think it's pretty routine that we have some desperate situations in the lobby of our administrative building on a pretty regular basis. We tell the clerk that sets up front for us that, yeah, you better be ready for that because folks come in crying, folks, you're going to hear every bit of what, you know, those things go on. And you're right. I don't think embarrassed is a bad word. People are, you know, there's pride that kicks in that if you have to walk into an office like ours and ask for help, people just don't want to do it. So, there is a lot of that goes on and it's unfortunate. And like I say, Cheryl may have something to add for that as well.
We don't provide emergency housing, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. You know, so we have people who come in and in the midst of crisis situations where they need immediate housing and they have to go through the application and screening process. So it's difficult to see those situations. And we try to refer folks to other agencies that may be able to help them through that crisis. But there's no, for us, with that waiting list that we have, there's no way of predicting how long somebody's going to be on that waiting list before they get housed. So we try to be a resource for folks and point them in a different direction if we can't assist them right away.
Is there an average of how long someone has to wait, or is that hard to say?
It's hard to say. It depends on what they've applied for. Mm-hmm. You know, I would just add one thing to that is life can change in a heartbeat. Will, you work in the news, you know that, that your circumstances could change at any point.
Absolutely.
Whether that be a loss of a job, a loss of a family member, something that could send you into a spiral that you can't control. And we see that as well. So, you know, it's difficult to see folks be so judgy about who we serve, our population, because we know the true stories of who's in there and what the cause of that is.
I need to take one final break, and then I have another question or two about the Housing Authority and things going on. And if I have a minute or two, I have to shamelessly help plug Galesburg Area Crime Stoppers, as Derek is the chairman of that organization here in town these days. So we may get to that, hopefully, but we need to take a break.
It sounds good on AM, but sounds even better on FM. 93.7 FM, 1400 AM, WGIL.
7:56 at Galesburg Live on WGIL. I'm Will Stevenson. My guests are Derek Antoine and Cheryl Leffler from the Knox County Housing Authority. Derek, I have one more housing-related question. I know that you were in Washington recently, and I know that you've gone a couple of times to talk to federal lawmakers about funding and other issues, right?
Sure. I was told off the air that I'm talking too much. So I'm going to let Cheryl. I'm going to let Cheryl handle that question. But yeah, we were in D.C. and took a number of our staff out there, and we regularly advocate. So I'll let Cheryl talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, we were at a recent conference for one of the public housing national advocacy groups, and we took some of our staff out there and met with representatives of the staff from Sherry Bustos' office and Tammy Duckworth's office.
Great. What sorts of things do you talk to them about? What sort of the main needs? Is it more funding, different regulation, combination of that?
It's a combination of that. Part of it is to tell our story, to put faces and in front of them and let them know that the work that we're doing in the community and that we'd like to continue that work, and not so much asking for additional funding, but the continued funding and to fully fund the program. And also, you know, we deal with a lot of federal regulation that guides our work, and sometimes that gets cumbersome. So
no,
believe it or not,
I find that very hard to believe.
So trying to minimize some of that administrative burden, and so that we can just get the work done without all the other stuff, so to speak.
I also find it very hard to believe that Congress might not fully fund something that's an important need of the community, I said sarcastically.
Right. Yeah. Noted sarcastically.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but that's good that you're able to get out and do that. Although I imagine you find that as the longer you guys have been on the job, the harder it is to kind of leave for a while, isn't it?
It is. It is. Our work waits for us. Our work waits for us, and it piles up. So to take that time away is important. I think it demonstrates to our legislators that we're a priority. You know, I know we're a needle in a haystack to the folks that go out there and ask for things and ask for money and whatnot. But, you know, my first trip to Washington, I was very nervous. So I walked into those offices, super nervous, didn't know, you know, I was very intimidated to walk in. And within 5 minutes of sitting down in my first advocacy session, I realized I was the expert in the room. And my confidence then began to swell. And I realized at that point that I'm there to educate them. I'm there to let them know why the money that they spend with us is an important thing. So I think us doing that on a regular basis continues to keep us in their minds and helps us in that capacity.
I have about 45 seconds left, Derek. I wanted to make mention of the fact that you are the man in charge of the Galesburg Area Crime Stoppers Board these days.
Yes, I am president of the local chapter here, the Galesburg Area Crime Stoppers, local program that we do for folks to report crime anonymously. Simply stated, you call us, you tell us about something. If it turns into an arrest, you get paid. So
certainly has proven its worth here in recent times, unfortunately.
Yeah, and that's another thing that there's always going to be a need for, unfortunately. And this is just an avenue for folks that don't, you know, want to remain anonymous as they're reporting crimes to do that. So you can call the number, if I may give that, Will, there, 309-344-0044, or to keep up with the technology of the kids these days, you can text a tip.
You're not that old, Derek.
Yeah, well, I'm getting there.
I am, but you're not.
The gray in my beard suggests otherwise.
Yeah.
You can text the word Galesburg and the tip to 274-637. That spells crimes. Look how we did that there.
That's
to do that, and you would get an immediate response and can remain anonymous that way. So we do good things in the community. We have a great board, a very involved board. We currently have a nice little bit of money, so call us. Let us know what's going on so we can help you catch that award.
I need to have you on one of these days on one of my programs to talk more about that as opposed to just 60 seconds at the end here.
But nonetheless,
Derek Antoine,
happy to do it.
Chair of the Crime Stoppers Board and also Executive Director of the Knox County Housing Authority, and Cheryl Leffler, Assistant Director. Thanks so much for coming in this morning. I hope we informed some people of some things here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Appreciate it.